time for the Car Doctor on AM 950 WROL. Got a car question? Call us at 617-770-3030. That's 617-770-3030. Now, here's the Car Doctor, John Paul, on AM 950 WROL, the spirit of Boston.
And good Saturday morning, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Car Doctor program on AM 950 WROL, the spirit of Boston. And before I forget, and I'll announce this a couple of times, if you won tickets to the New Hampshire Auto Show for this weekend coming up, well, there was a bit of a problem. Apparently, the tickets didn't show up till yesterday, but all you need to do, if you still want to go to the show, if you're one of the many winners who won tickets, just go to the show, go to the will call window, tell them who you are, and they'll have your four tickets waiting for you there. So your tickets are at the will call window of the New Hampshire Auto Show. Then also, you need to think about, some other things, And then, of course, we have a little bit of feedback coming through the board for whatever reason, and I don't know what it is, and it distracted me for a minute. But with us on the phone is author Tom Cotter. He has written a lot of books, and his latest one looks really interesting because it talks about how he got around and did some of the things that he did. And Tom, welcome back to the Car Doctor program here in Boston.
Hi, John. Good morning.
Good morning. It sounds like you're out on the road right now looking for more barn finds.
Well, not quite yet, but I'm going to leave next Sunday, from Chicago in my 39 Ford Woody Wagon and driving Route 66 out to Santa Monica, California. So that will be the trip of a lifetime.
You got a spare seat?
I think I need a whole truck, a bus behind me that everybody wants to go.
Well, before we get into this trip of a lifetime, tell us a little bit about some of the books you've written, as well as this new one that you just had that just came out.
Well, the first barn find book, I've written about 15 books now, but half of them have been about barn finds. And I have to tell you, I'm not new to this. This is something I've been doing since I'm about 12, 13 years old. I still have the 39 Ford Woody I bought in a barn when I was 15 in 1969. So this is something I've been doing my whole life. And, some people are good at fishing and some good at hunting. Well, I'm just good at finding cars. And so I told my publisher about a couple of cars they had found. He said, Tom, I think there might be a book there.
Mm-hmm.
So that resulted in the Cobra in the Barn. That's about 10 years ago.
Yep.
And it sold over 100,000 copies. So as a result, I've done a number of books since then, the Corvette in the Barn, the Vincent in the Barn, and a couple of motorcycle books. And I have to take credit for a lot of the TV shows that are out there. Wayne Carini's show is a great show, and American Pickers and all these other shows. Well, none of those existed until these books came out and were bestsellers. So I think I began a genre, so to speak.
You probably don't, stick the car by the side of the road and go, oh, look, a surprise.
Well, no. this most recent book, which is Barn Find Road Trip, I think of it as a reality TV show without TV. It is what reality should be. It's like, okay, let's just ride down the road. Let's talk to that farmer. Let's turn down that street and go up that dirt road and find cars the way I did when I was a kid, before I even had a driver's license. And the name of the book is Barn Find Road Trip, Three Guys, 14 Days, 1,000 Collector Cars Discovered. And it was an amazing 14 days. I mean, we just hit the road in the Woody, met people, and found, actually, I think the number was about 1,556 cars.
Wow. Now it's not. Now I just somehow got distracted by the three guys in 14 days. So I'm hoping you actually stopped at a decent restaurant every once in a while, and you weren't fueled by beef jerky and Red Bull.
No, that would have made the evenings even tougher because three of us here in a hotel for 15 days. So it could have gotten real ugly if we ate ugly. It's a buddy of mine, Brian Barr, who's a fellow car geek, and then we were followed by a support vehicle, Michael Allen Ross, driving the support vehicle. He's a photographer from Northern California. So, we just hit the road, and we're doing the same thing. The same two two guys are joining me in my Woody, and Ford's supplying a support vehicle, a Ford Explorer. And we're just going to drive Route 66 and see what we can find. I mean, on the old Mother Road.
Mm. No, that sounds exciting. When you were out for this for the Barn Find road trip, what was sort of the most exciting thing? You know, as you came across this thing, and it never fails. I was working in Providence, Rhode Island one day, and I parked my car at a parking garage. I was walking by, and I walked by an alleyway, and there was a early 60s, one of those Econoline pickup trucks, just kind of tucked over in the corner. And it was actually in reasonably good shape, hadn't been on the road since, I think, 2009. You know, the four tires on it were mostly flat, but there it was just sitting there. And what a neat little vehicle.
Yeah, those cars are going away. You know, I'm finding that some of the most pleasant finds are pickup trucks and station wagons because people used them up and threw them away. They were just utility vehicles that nobody took care of, nobody waxed, nobody did tune-ups as often as they should. And, you know, it went through an owner or two or three, and then it wound up in a junkyard. So now there's lots of two-door hardtops and sedans. But wagons and pickup trucks, there's a real shortage of those things. Mm. And I think collectors in the future are going to have a hard time. Unless we start finding them, preserving them now, I think future collectors are going to have a hard time seeing what they even, what they're missing.
In all your years of doing this, did you all of a sudden sort of stumble across, you know, what everybody wants to, the barn that happens to have 15 cars tucked away in it or 35 cars tucked away in it?
Oh, yeah. I have to tell you that, you know, I didn't invent the term barn find, but I'm sure it capitalized on it. And so to me, a barn find is not necessarily a car in a barn. To me, it could be in the alleyway like the Econoline pickup. It can be in a warehouse, in a field, in a garage, in a lean-to. It's just a forgotten and kind of an ignored car. And so on this trip we took, Barn Find Road Trip, the book came out about 4 weeks ago, I guess the most amazing find was a guy in just north of Baltimore, Maryland, Mike Annan, and we had just heard about this guy that had all sorts of cars. John, it was unbelievable. This guy had 150 cars in his backyard, and he had started to put them there so long ago that there was a forest of bamboo shoots, bamboo trees or bushes, whatever, that developed around the cars, and we could only meet him at night because he worked in the day. So we went there at 8 o'clock at night. It was dark. We had flashlights, and it really felt like Jurassic Park as we're walking through pushing bamboo shoots aside. And, oh, look, here's a 64 Chevy SS. Oh, there's a Divco milk truck. Oh, look, there are three Isettas. Oh, there's a Porsche 914. I mean, he had so many cars. And I guess if he had a car that was the most common, the car that he loved most was a East German Trabant. He had about 20 of those cars that he rented out to movies occasionally.
Mm.
But, boy, he had English Fords and Corvairs. It was just unbelievable. So this is at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock at night. We're walking through here with flashlights, finding, oh, look at over here, the Jaguar E-Type. So I just have to say that was the most amazing find.
Mm. Yeah, it is. It's, living in the Boston area, we see a little bit of this. But you get out to the country, and I was even down in southern Rhode Island this past week in what could be really described as the country. And I'm kind of looking off into the fields around some of the old farmland that's down there. And, yeah, there was an old Divco milk truck just sort of stuck in the corner. And it looked like they used it for storage. And there was a easily a late 40s, early 50s Chevy pickup truck that was there and an old Buick. And these things are just kind of tucked away. Not really protected, but they're still sitting there. And, you know, the worst, in my estimation, the worst thing that can ever happen with those cars is somebody decides to scrap them for the price of the steel.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, you mentioned Rhode Island. I have to tell you that some of my earliest and most productive barn finding was in Rhode Island. I come from Long Island, and I would regularly make trips to Bristol, mm-hmm. Rhode Island, and take the ferry boat over to Prudence Island. And Prudence Island was like being thrown back in time 50 years. You'd go over there, and you could hitchhike, and a 1944 would pick you up. You didn't need, at the time, you didn't need a driver's license. You didn't need insurance. There was a general store, and there was fields full of old cars. So over the years, over the decades, cars would come over to Prudence Island by ferry. People would use them until they didn't run anymore, and they'd put them in the field. Mm. And they were too expensive to get off the island. So we found Chrysler Airflows, and it was just incredible. Now, I'm sure I haven't been back here in 40 years. I'm sure they're all gone by now, but oh, my God. And, you know, back in the 60s and 70s, Prudence Island was, I've never seen like it. I don't think there's anything like that in the world again.
Yeah, it's you reminded me of something. There's a guy near where I live. He runs a little, I mistakenly called it an antique store. He just says he buys and sells junk. But he was over in Martha's Vineyard, and he found a Volkswagen thing. And he said it was just sort of tucked over in the corner. And he said the people who own the home bought it years ago to kind of have it as an island car. It just sat there for a while. He ended up putting an ignition coil in it, a battery in it, and some fresh fuel in it. And he got the thing to start up. And he as it turned out, he knew somebody that was doing some construction work. So he was able to load it on their flatbed truck and get it off the island and bring it back on the mainland. And he kept it around for a while, and he eventually sold it for, you know, probably twice what he paid for it. And he was happy with that. But just the idea that he's like, you know, I think there's a lot of these oddball little cars that are tucked away, you know, in people's barns and garages in the vineyard. He said, I'm going to start to, you know, maybe start to look for those. I think there's some money to be made.
Isn't that something? Well, you know, I think if you just open your eyes, you'll find that cars are hiding in plain sight. You know, so many people just drive by as a matter of force commuting, and they don't look left and right. I mean, how many times have my wife told me, will you look where you're going? You know, you're going to get an accident. But I'm always looking behind the building I just passed.
Sounds like we're related, or our wives are, one or the other. But it is amazing what's sort of just sort of out there sometime. And your email address seems to reflect a Cobra frame number.
Yeah, I'm a lucky guy. I own a 289 Cobra, and when I was able to make the my domain name for my email, that number, CSX2490, I jumped at it. So people think either I'm a train enthusiast, because CSX Railroad, or they just think, like, you know, I've got some stupid website or something. Mm. Or the very few of them, like you, say, oh, I think that has a Carroll Shelby ring to it.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll tell you the most incredible barn find. I found a Cobra in a barn, a 289, and that was a cool deal. But to me, the most incredible barn find I found was in Greenville, South Carolina, which I live in Charlotte. It's about 2.5 hours from where I live. I found a Cunningham C3 coupe in a basement in Greenville, South Carolina, which is one of the rarest sports cars in the world. It was built in West Palm Beach, Florida. It's got a Chrysler Hemi with 4 carburetors, built by Breeks Cunningham. 25 were built, and I found one of them. And it's not like I didn't know what it was. I had been dreaming about finding one or owning one for 30 years. And wham, there it is. And so that's sitting in my garage next to the Cobra.
Wow. Yeah, that, you know, talk about a little bit of history there, because, you know, everybody will say that the Cobras were the continuation of the Cunninghams.
Yep. Yeah. And in fact, Briggs doesn't get credit for it, but he invented the racing stripe. Mm. He raced cars in Europe, and he had to race cars with the nation's colors. Germany was silver, and French racing blue, and British racing green. Italians, of course, were red. Well, American was white. Well, he thought white cars were boring, so he put 2 blue stripes on them. And Carroll Shelby wound up inheriting that, the racing stripe thing. But if you Google Cunningham stripes, it'll tell you that he invented the racing stripe.
Mm. Cool. Yeah, no, it's really automotive history is pretty interesting. And when you go way back in time, you found out that, you know, you think of, you know, General Motors and Ford and Chrysler, but some of these early car companies, they all ended up going bankrupt. You know, nobody made $1 billion when cars were first being made. But you look at that history, and the history is so rich with a variety of different things that happened. And, you know, maybe 100 years from now or something, we'll look back at, you know, Fisker or a Tesla or somebody and say, wow, remember when that happened? I don't know.
I think so. We might find a bunch of Teslas behind a gas station.
Yeah, you never know. So, are there still deals to be had? Can you still find a car that is in reasonably good condition? You think that you can, you know, talk out of a barn?
Absolutely. The whole focus and the whole purpose of this book, Barn Find Road Trip, was to prove that you didn't have to have a TV show to find cars.
Mm.
That you could just go out and turn left, turn right, look over that hill, take that dirt road, and find cars. And I have to say, depending on where you live, if you find a car that's been outdoors a long time, it's probably shot. And so the challenge is finding cars that are inside buildings or protected by a roof. So my recommendation is make friends with policemen, landscapers, UPS and FedEx delivery people. People that can go on private property legally and can tell you what's behind the fence or through the trees if you can't see. I've got a bunch of tips. You know, go in the wintertime. If you live in a northern climate where leaves drop off trees in the winter, well, that's the best time to go look at the cars because you can see twice as far. If you live in Nevada or New Mexico, cars outdoors can probably still be purchased. But I have to say that the greatest door opener or calling card that we used on this trip was driving a 39 Ford Woody wagon.
Oh, I bet.
Because I have the feeling that if I had a new SUV or some kind of big shiny pickup truck and driving onto a dirt road to a hillbilly's house in West Virginia, I probably would have been asked kind of to leave.
But, or shot at.
Yeah, I hear the banjos now. And then, but the, you know, drive up in a 39 Ford Woody wagon, you know, the guy who's opening the door for you wants to talk to you as much as you want to talk to him.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had some great relationships with people that, you know, they never heard of me. They never read my book.
Mm-hmm.
But boy, they just opened their house to us, let us look through the garages, the backyards. They were wonderful.
Mm.
So I would recommend to your listeners, if they're going out hunting for cars, drive an interesting car.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. And you talked about building the relationship and kind of paying attention. A friend of mine, his father was quite the car collector, and I was looking at, and I don't even know what year it was, and I'll just say it's a 48 Ford, and it was in beautiful condition. And I said to him, what was the deal with this car? And I said, did you paint it? What'd you do with it? And he said, no, we got it this way. He said, it's been in an old barn for its pretty much its entire life, covered with horse blankets, but it was a real barn with a basement under it and a cupola on it, so there was a lot of airflow through it, so everything looked good. And I said, well, what was the story with it? And he said, well, it belonged to a drugstore owner in town, and it was his girlfriend's car, and one day he brought it home, and his wife saw it and said, what's this? And she took the keys and threw them away, and the car literally sat in the garage in this barn until the old guy died. And then the wife or the girlfriend, I don't remember which, found out about it and just offered it up for sale. But it literally sat under blankets for 25 or 30 years. They came, and they always kind of, you know, kept track of it and knew where it was and came back and uncovered it all. The tires were like literally fused to the wooden floor when they broke the car free from the floor. It took parts of the wood with it, but they took it home and they cleaned it all up and changed the fluids in it and put fresh gas in it and got the thing to start and run, and the thing looks beautiful. And again, only because they were sort of paying attention and never really gave up.
Yep. There's all sorts of tips about sending letters to older people who won't sell a car, because one day when they are deceased or go to a nursing facility, whatever, their relatives go through their belongings. They might find a letter. Oh, look at this. This guy in North Carolina, he's interested in the Model T that Dad's got.
Mm.
And they'd like it to go to somebody that appreciates it. Yeah. So there's all sorts of great tips like that I've featured in my books over the years.
Yeah, no, I think the other thing is when you, like you said, showing up in the old car, but letting people know that you have that same interest, you have that same love of old cars that the person who either owned it or does own it now has, but they just can't keep it, they can't take care of it, and when you care about something, it's easier for someone to let go of it.
Yep. Sure is. Yep.
So the new book is Barn Find Road Trips. It's available, I guess, at all the normal places, right?
Yeah, I think Barnes & Noble took a whole bunch. I heard a guy the other day who was in Cincinnati, and he said that there were 10 on a shelf in Barnes & Noble. So that's great to hear. Books A Million bought a bunch. You can get it through motorbooks.com, Amazon. There you go. It's a great Christmas present.
I think it is, too. And motorbooks.com, a good place to find all of your books. And No, good place to go. And your new book, when do you think you'll have, after this fantastic trip on Route 66, where apparently you're leaving me out, but that's okay.
That's okay.
Yeah.
It will be out next September. It looks like I have two books coming out at the same time. I have a book about Cuba car culture that I'm co-authoring with Bill Warner from Amelia Island.
Yep.
And I have made a few trips to Cuba. And so that I'm working on that. That's got to be done by January 1st. And then I'll start working on this Route 66 book, as soon as I get back.
Yeah.
It'll be right before Thanksgiving.
Yeah, and although it wasn't a terrific show, but that TV show that had to do with the Cuban car culture that was on for 6 or 7 episodes over the summer, I think what it really showed was the ability for people with a limited amount of parts and a fantastic love of cars and a mechanical ability to really keep some of these old cars running was just phenomenal.
Yeah. I have to tell you, though, you know, you hear everybody say, boy, as soon as relations open up, I'm going to go to Cuba and buy a car.
Not going to happen?
With a very few exceptions, there is no car there that I would want to buy.
Yeah.
They are, bodywork is done with plaster of Paris. They've been painted with sponges. They use shampoo in the brake lines. It's very, very sad. These people are running on empty.
Yeah.
But as far as bringing cars from there to America, it makes no sense. With the exception of, we found a Porsche 4 Cam Carrera. We found a couple of 300 SL Mercedes. But there's probably 6 cars like that in the country. And they're in very, very rough shape.
Mm.
But they're worth bringing back and restoring. But.
Yeah.
You can't take anything out of Cuba. They're seen as national treasures.
Yeah, no. The passion the Cubans have for their cars is it really did show in that program. And just the idea, I was trying to fix something at home one day, and I was doing something. I'm like, you know, if they can make a drive shaft out of aluminum foil, why can't I fix this? You know.
Well, because they have to, and you don't.
Yeah. So. Hey, Tom, always a pleasure. All your books are available. I think Motorbooks is a great source. They're a great source. And like you said, great holiday gift, great coffee table books, fun reads always, great photography in all of your books. And let us know when the next one's coming up. Love to talk to you about it, and love to talk to you anyway. You always have good stories.
All right, John, you have a great weekend.
All right, you as well. Take care. Bye-bye. That was Tom Carter. The book is called Barn Find Road Trips. Tom's been on the program years ago. I think he did a book that had to do with some rock and rollers and their car hobbies, and we found out some really interesting things from them as well. Why don't we take a break, pay some bills? My name's John Paul. This is the Car Doctor program. You're listening on AM 950 WROL, the Spirit of Boston. We'll be right back.
Marita here with Mike from Coastal Heating and Air Conditioning. Mike, I have to ask, do you recommend eliminating the need for oil in your home, and why?
Well, I'm going to speak from my personal experience. I was calling the oil man at least 3 times a year at a minimum of $800 a shot. So when I put the Mitsubishi in, I eliminated him completely. And if you have forced hot air oil system, we all know what it smells like when it turns on, and we know the noise it makes. So if you eliminate that and put in the indoor units, you'll actually clean the air in your home. You will have no smell whatsoever, and again, with no noise. So it actually purifies the air. They have allergenic filters in them. So anyone that has breathing issues, they claim this will take care of it.
Wow. Call Mike at Coastal today at 617-770-0636 for all of your heating and air conditioning needs.
Winter doesn't need to get the best of you. Not with Sullivan Tire and Auto Service on your side. Hey, this is Paul Sullivan. The Farmer's Almanac is predicting another tough New England winter. The key to getting through is preparing. We'll help you get ready and save you money, too. We've stocked our warehouses so we can provide you with these great deals. Buy three, get the fourth tire free on all winter tires. And buy three and get the fourth tire free on all Yokohama all-season tires. Come in today and beat the rush. Thank you.
And Sullivan Tire does more than just offer the best deals on tires. Trust our team of ASE-certified professionals to keep your car running right all winter long. We do it all. Factory scheduled maintenance, winterizing, batteries, brakes, mufflers, oil changes, tune-ups, computerized wheel alignment, and so much more. Visit SullivanTire.com/60years or call 877-592-TIRE.
At Salem Radio, we're in the birthday business. Let us throw your birthday party. The package includes a full tour of our studios, an in-studio radio recording with the birthday child and guests, cake, of course, along with hoodies, juice and goodie bags, plus a G-rated video like VeggieTales, a photo booth, and a framed birthday photo as a souvenir. Just $25 per child. Give us a call at 617-691-2526 or visit our website at WROLradio.com. And let's party for your child's birthday.
Now, let's get back to the Car Doctor.
And welcome back to the Car Doctor program on AM 950 WROL, the Spirit of Boston. My name is John Paul, the Car Doctor, here to help you with your car problems on this Saturday morning. If you would like to join us, our phone number is 617-770-3030. We are going to be talking with Scott McKee in a bit, but he is the National Director of Public Relations for Kia, and they have a pretty interesting program going on. Next weekend, Halloween weekend, up in New Hampshire. So a few things going on. And also, we have some trivia we'll do a little bit later. And we will also do a little update on what's going on in the news. Just a lot of fun things. But right now, let's talk to John. John, are you there? John.
Hi, John.
Hey, how are you?
All right, how are you?
Good.
I have a question. I think I have a, it's a 99 Maxima.
Okay.
I think I have a rear brake caliper that might be seized or hung up or something. The passenger rear wheel seems to be getting hot, and I've heard ticking intermittently, but the car doesn't really make a noise, or it's not pulling or anything like that. So the only real evidence I've seen besides the heat is some additional brake dust on the wheel.
Yeah, that's usually a good sign.
I'm wondering what the solution is.
Well, the solution is buy two calipers and put them both on.
So you do have...
Yeah, okay. It's always best to put them on in pairs, only because... you could try one, I suppose, if you wanted to, but normally it's best to put them on in pairs because you'll get uneven braking. You're already getting uneven braking. And why you don't see any pulling now is because it's in the rear. If this was going on in the front, it would be a whole different story. You would be feeling the car when you go to step on the brake. You'd be feeling the car, you know, slide from one side to the other and, you know, just act up. But, more than likely, it is a bad caliper. The only way it wouldn't be a bad caliper would be if maybe it was a collapsed brake line, because the brake lines are flexible and they can deteriorate inside. So they'll act like a one-way valve. You'll step on the brake fluid will push down to the caliper, the interior line will act like a valve, won't let the brake fluid back, and it'll cause the caliper to hang up. A good way to figure that out is, if you wanted to, you would jack up the car, if the wheel, step on the brake, and if the wheel felt like it hung up, just loosen up the bleeder screw. If you loosen up the bleeder screw and the wheel starts to turn free, it's a problem with the brake line, not the caliper. But more than likely, it is a it's a bad caliper on the car.
So once they've kind of malfunctioned, it's...
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's rebuilding kits if you wanted to rebuild it, but it's just as easy to get, you know, go out and buy a rebuilt caliper and put it on and bleed it off and you're on your way.
On a scale of 1 to 10 as a job, how hard a job is that?
A six. I don't know. I just made that up. I don't know. It's not a lot of work. It's a couple of bolts and a little bit of prying, but you know nothing that's too difficult to do. Even in the back, it's not a terribly difficult job. There's probably two through bolts with some slides. The brake line itself. Other than that, not really a lot to it. You just have to make sure that the brake line goes back on correctly and it's tight and all that. But you know, other than that, not too difficult. But something that probably an hour to do maybe. You know, the hardest part. The hardest part is going to be probably bleeding the brakes.
And if I take it somewhere, how much do you think a rear brake job runs, hours?
The difference is if you brought it someplace to have the brake work done on it, the difference is, you know, how much you're going to pay for the caliper, and depending on where the parts come from, you know, to just do rear brakes on a car is about an hour's worth of labor, more or less. And to replace the caliper while you're doing the brake work on both sides is probably less than another hour's worth after that. So it's a couple hours worth of labor plus bleeding the brakes off, plus the set of pads. You know, you should replace the pads because they're probably all cooked from the heat. And, you're going to spend... Nissan parts, the calipers are going to be $200 a piece. You know, aftermarket, someplace, they're going to be maybe half of that. So you're going to spend $500 at a repair shop. But the thing of it is, it's not going to get any better by itself, and that's the biggest problem. It's going to just get worse, and eventually it's going to hang up, and it's going to get really, really hot, and that's where you're going to end up with some real problems.
Okay.
So I would get it done before you end up stuck by the side of the road with flames coming out of the tires.
Yeah, I would avoid that.
Which is the worst case. Okay?
All right.
Take care.
Thanks.
Yep, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, I had the I was talking earlier in this week, we were talking about safety, and last week or so we were talking with Jim Vella, the president of the Ford Fund. And one of the things Ford was doing at the time, they were doing a driver safety program down at Gillette with high school kids. But I actually had Jim on because I really wanted to hear about how he's trying to end hunger in New England by donating $20 million to food pantries around New England, and also a couple of Ford Transit vehicles that were going to be given to the food pantries. So those are all good things. But kind of on the same wave, and this kind of goes with Teen Driver Safety Week, there is a Teen Safe Driver program going on up in Epping, New Hampshire, Halloween weekend. And while I'm thinking about New Hampshire, I need to say it again. If you won tickets to the New Hampshire Auto Show, you still will be able to go to the show for free. You have to go to the ticket window, go to the will call window. Those are the ones, you know, like special reserve. Go to the will call window, tell them who you are, tell them you won tickets on WROL Radio or Salem Radio Boston, and they will have the tickets waiting for you there. Due to a problem with the tickets, they weren't mailed out till late. But with us is Scott McKee. He is the Director of Public Relations for Kia, and professional top fuel driver Doug Herbert to talk about the brakes teen driver program. Scott, good morning, and welcome to the Car Doctor program here in Boston.
Hi, John. Thank you very much. It's great to be with you, and we're really excited about bringing the Brakes Teen Proactive Driving School to New England. It's the first time that the school will be there, and you know, we're at Kia. We are the official vehicle and the presenting sponsor of the Brakes School. But really, we believe in the mission, and that's why we're involved, and we're trying to get the word out so that we can get as many teens and their parents through this program as possible, just to make the road safer and keep, you know, save lives, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, Teen Driver Safety Week is right around now, and, you know, you think about how teens can possibly get hurt, and a lot of people don't realize they're more likely to be hurt or killed in a vehicle, and some of it is just a direct result of lack of training, and even though they've gone through driver's education, driver's education is pretty good about getting, you know, getting you your license, but a lot of times really doesn't teach you how to drive, and that is one of the missions of the Brakes program and why Kia is involved with it, right?
That's exactly right. You know, the likelihood of being in an accident is just staggering. You know, nearly 90% of teens will be in an accident in the first 3 years of driving, and it's, as you said, based on inexperience. Driver's Ed doesn't show you all of the situations that you'll face as a driver. It basically teaches you the rules of the road, and so you can pass the test. But in order to keep you safe on the roads, you need to have a little bit more skill than that. You need to face some challenges that you're likely to face, some scenarios that you're likely to face on the road, but do it in a controlled environment, and frankly, not in mom and dad's car, but rather in one of our cars, with a professional instructor riding alongside of you and telling you what to do, so that when you face that situation in the real world out on the roads, you know how to react.
And one of the things that we certainly see is, you mentioned mom and dad, and that's why I wanted to kind of interrupt you there. They're not always the best examples as far as, you know, good defensive driving techniques. And kind of the problem is, the way I look at it, essentially, your kids have been watching you drive since the day you brought them home from the hospital, and you might have not been setting a good example for the last 16 years.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you know, when we go to the school, it's interesting to see the dynamic between the teens and their parents. Usually they come in and the teen's not too keen on being there because, of course, it's early morning, probably on a Saturday or a Sunday. But then they have a joint experience, a shared experience between the parent and the teen, where they both learn a lot of valuable skills and unlearn some bad habits in the case of the parent. And then when they go away from the school, the parents and the teens kind of serve as reinforcement for each other. So the learning continues beyond that, and it's really, really great to see that, and that cements the learning and makes sure that both parent and teen, you know, build some safe habits where they might not have had them before.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, with you is also Doug Herbert. He is the founder of Brakes, a professional drag racer. And Doug, welcome to the Car Doctor program here in Boston.
Hey, thanks for having me on your show, and we're sure looking forward to coming up to the New England area, and specifically New England Dragway this weekend.
Yeah,
good experiences.
Okay, New England Dragway is a great place. It kind of it was kind of suffering there for a while, but NHRA and locally here, I think Bobby Tasker, I think, was up there with a bulldozer one day straightening the place out. So
yeah, right. Well, it's they love the drag racing up there, and everybody loves that. That's obviously what I love. And then, you know, my story changed in 2008 when my two boys were killed in a car accident, something that you just can't fathom.
Yeah, if you don't mind, can you just talk about that a little bit, about, you know, how this came about? I think everybody's concerned about their kids and their grandkids and driving, but, you know, for the worst of reasons, you got a first-hand look at what happens here. Can you tell us a little bit about what happened?
Well, yeah, in 2008, I was actually at a NHRA drag race, racing my top field dragster, and my boys were involved in a car accident less than a mile from our house. And at that time, they both lost their life in a car accident. And I didn't know that that's the number one thing that kills teenagers at that time, because it didn't affect me. It hadn't affected my life personally. And I wasn't aware that car accidents are the number one killer of teenagers. And in fact, there are more teenagers die in car accidents than the next four causes of death combined. And I had no idea of that. And here I am racing this car that goes 330 miles an hour and really without a worry to find out that my boys were, you know, they lost their life in a car accident. So I made it my mission at that time that I was going to go out and do something about the problem and see if we couldn't change that, and with the goal of training every kid in the country and helping them, helping every teenager be a little more responsible and a little bit safer behind the wheel, and give them some ideas about making better decisions behind the wheel. Because it's not just about having the knowledge and the experience and the skills behind the wheel. It's about making good decisions as well. So we try and do that at breaks. And then, you know, a few years ago, as Scott was mentioning, Kia came on board, and they help us with our vehicle. So all the vehicles that we use at our breaks programs are provided by Kia. And so when you don't have to use your own car to drop the wheel off the side of the road to learn how to recover, or to learn how to recover from a skid, or to activate the anti-lock brakes, or do a distraction exercise, some of these different things that we do, it's pretty neat, because a lot of these things you don't want to actually do in your own car. So we're lucky enough to have Kia provide these cars that we can do this the brakes class and give them the experience and hopefully the level of training that they need that'll keep them out of an accident and keep them safer on the road.
Yeah, I know locally here in New England, there's a school who runs a very similar program, and one of their key things is seems to be they're buying a lot of brakes and buying a lot of tires. So I can only imagine. And you run this program pretty much right across the country, right?
Well, we really do. Yeah, we've been, like I said, from help, you know, with help from Kia and help from a lot of our supporters around the country. We've actually had programs in 27 states. This year we're going to train about 5,000 teenagers, and our plans are to increase that number next year. And like I said, my goal is to train every teenager. That is my goal. And that's a pretty high goal, because obviously there's millions of teenagers, but that's what we want to do. You know, coming to New England for the first time, we're just really excited about it, and hopefully we can make an impact and make a lasting impact that'll keep us coming back there, so we can continue to train new teams as they come up and become driving age every year.
John, if I could just jump in and add something to what Doug was saying, you know, in comparing to other schools, you know, obviously we want anybody to get as much training as they can. As Doug said, it's a daunting task to try and get every teenager to have this kind of training. So, you know, we encourage anybody to do the training. But the difference with brakes is that it's free. It's free, and it's not in your parents' car, so it makes a huge difference. And we know for a fact that it is actually making a difference. There was a study done by a professor out of the University of North Carolina at Charlotte that shows that teens who graduated from brakes are 64% less likely to be in an accident in the first 3 years. And when you consider that teens are nearly 90% likely to be in an accident in the first 3 years, that's a huge difference, two-thirds reduction in the likelihood of being in an accident. So we know this works, and we know that it's free.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, we just need to get the word out to make sure we get as many teens in and their parents through this training as possible.
Yeah, that is one of the, like you said, one of the key things is, you know, it really works, and it really has a significant effect on what happens when people are behind the wheel. I have a good friend who was a professional driver, and his employer said to him, I want you to go to one of these schools. And he said, I've been driving professionally for years. And he let me know after he went through, he said, you know, I learned a lot. Somebody else I know, and I'll just refer to him as Crash, who was in a crash essentially every 6 months, went through a school very similar to brakes, and as far as I know, 5 years later, what he learned in these kind of programs still sticks, and his driving record has improved dramatically. What are some of, either Doug or Scott, what are some of the key elements to the course that the kids are really surprised, and the parents as well? I know distraction certainly is one of them, but what are some of the other things that they come away with and they go, geez, I didn't know about that?
Well, you know, there again, I think, like we were talking about, we can teach the skills of driving But what we also try and do is relate my story and the story of nearly 5,000 other teenagers and families every year that that lose someone to a teenage car accident. So we're trying to change their behavior, to be honest with you.
Yep.
We're trying to get them to realize that this is a serious problem, and it's really not that hard to make a difference. And the difference might be not riding in the back of a pickup, or if somebody's drinking, you obviously tell them, hey, I'm not riding with you. You're not fit to be driving. Or somebody's just driving too fast. And one of my things that I tell them is, hey, not only does it matter when you're driving, but if you're a passenger, I wish my young son would have told my older boy, hey, you know what? I don't like how you're driving. Let me out of the car. And there's nothing wrong with doing that. And hopefully teenagers will learn, and parents will support them, that in case they're in a bad situation, one of the things that we ask parents to do in our program is to give their teenager what we call a hall pass. Like, let your teenager call you anytime, whatever, day, night, doesn't matter. You get up, you get out of bed, you go get them, you bring them home. You might talk to them a little bit about what happened, but there's no consequence. They don't get in trouble. You're not going to chew them out. You're just going to get them. You're bringing them home because they were in a place where they didn't really have a way out. And, you know, giving them a way out is a good thing. And what I tell parents is, hey, you know what? I'll give your kids my number, and they can call me, and I'll come get them and bring them home. That's how much we care about them. And I think that opens their eyes and gets them to realize that, you know, what we're doing for them is, there's no selfish reason behind it. What we're doing is we're trying to help them. We're really trying to help them. And the instructors that we have, you know, typically, as Scott was saying, teenagers come and they're kind of kicking and screaming. They don't need this. You know, they already kicked driver's ed. They've been driving for a year or two. You know, what do they need this for? They already know how to drive. Well, then all of a sudden, when they find out the instructor that they're driving with actually teaches defensive driving to the Secret Service guys that drive the president, or to the State Highway Patrol, or he does stunts in movies, or she does stunts in movies, or whatever, all of a sudden, that instructor that is our brakes person is all of a sudden a little bit of a role model. They go, wow, you teach the guys that drive the president defensive driving? Yeah, that's what I do. That's my job. And it all of a sudden it opens them up, because we find that teenagers who really want to learn, they just don't think they can learn. And then as soon as they figure out that there's really a lot to know about driving and about not only being safe behind the wheel, but just about being a good driver, they kind of open up. And once they open up, it's just the sky's the limit. Then all of a sudden the learning curve becomes really, really fast. And it's just a super experience for everyone. The parents, we actually have another set of instructors and another set of Kia provided cars that the parents are able to get instruction in. Because as you said earlier, the parents are the ones teaching the teenagers, but sometimes they don't know the best methods. You know, most parents are still teaching kids to pump the brakes. Well, you don't need to do that anymore. We've got anti-lock brakes. The cars take care of that themselves. And, you know, just little things like that, we actually help the parents be a little bit better drivers, too. Even though the parents and the teenagers are not in the car at the same time with each other, because, you know, they don't really need to be, and that's probably not necessarily the best thing to do. We keep the parents with one set of instructors in cars, and the teenagers with another set of instructors in cars. And they're learning simultaneously, basically the same thing, and then we bring them back together at the end. And it's kind of it's an amazing thing, because the teenagers that came into the class kicking and screaming, now all of a sudden they tell their mom or dad, hey, you know, I'm sorry I was being a pill this morning, but man, I'm really glad you brought me this. I had no idea this was going to be so fun.
Yeah. Can you kind of take us a little bit through how long the course is?
Add into that, that Doug just said, is it's fun. The skills that Doug is talking about with the different, exercises. So there's distracted driving where the teen is in there and trying to drive while the instructor is doing their best to distract them, whether playing with the radio or telling them to text their parents or whatever. And so that the team learns firsthand that they cannot do those two different activities at the same time. Then there's panic stops where they're hitting the brakes really hard. They're controlling a skid. So it's stuff that the teams might not have done before, and it actually is genuinely fun. But it goes beyond the skills, as Doug mentioned, more to kind of a mindset. They become aware that they don't know everything there is to know about driving safely. And they're aware of that, and so they pay attention to it more. And it's that kind of mindset change changes behavior and makes them safer.
Yeah, it really does. And so, how long is the course? How what time does it start? What time does it finish? Tell us a little bit about the logistics of it.
Okay. Well, next weekend up in New England, at the New England Dragway, we're going to have four classes. So there's a morning class and an afternoon class on both Saturday and Sunday. The morning class begins at 8 a.m. and we're finished at noon. And the afternoon class begins at 1 p.m. and finishes at 5 in the afternoon. So there'll be four classes. So it's only 4 hours out of the day. The class is free. There's really no reason to not come. Kia's providing the cars. Brakes is the charity nonprofit that's providing the instruction and all the advice and the training. So, we just encourage everybody up there in the New England area to come out and learn about it. There's nothing bad that they're going to learn. They're going to learn everything that's good and everything that's going to help keep them safe and out of an accident.
And this is the equivalent of a $300 program in most cases.
If not more. Yeah, so it's, but just to give you the specifics, it's Epping, New Hampshire, New England Dragway, October 31st and November 1st. And you can go to putonthebrakes.org and click on the link to register for a class and just find that Epping, New Hampshire one. And then each of the four sessions will be there. So you can select either the 8 a.m. Saturday or the 1 p.m. Saturday or the morning or afternoon session for Sunday. So the website is putonthebrakes.org. And it'll give you all the information you need, but in particular, that's the best way to register. One thing I should also mention is that we do ask, even though the school is completely free, we do ask that if you register, we require that you put down a deposit. And that deposit is refundable so long as you show up. And that's just to make sure that nobody changes their mind at 7:30 on Saturday morning and decides not to show up. Because we're trying to teach as many teams as we can, each of those seats in that school is valuable. So we want to make sure that there's a little, let's call it skin in the game,
yep,
for people to be motivated to show up, on the weekend and actually attend the class. But if they attend, then that $99 deposit is fully refundable, though many people will often say, look, keep my $99. This was worth that and way more.
Yeah, and let's face it. It's, what you're teaching along with safe driving is also responsibility. And, putting a credit card down to reserve an appointment is just another level of responsibility. All makes sense.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. Hey, well,
that's right. Really the bottom line is we have generally in most places that we go, we end up with more people on a waiting list trying to get in as the people that can get in. And so, what that deposit does is just ensure that we won't have empty seats, because we hate to be out there and have all these vehicles and instructors and everybody's ready to go, and then we end up having 10 people that don't show up in the morning. And we've got 100 people on the waiting list that are just dying to be there, and yet we can't give them the opportunity because somebody didn't show up.
Makes complete sense. So one more time, it's going to be taking place Saturday and Sunday. So it's going to be not this coming weekend, but the weekend after, right?
That's right. So October 31st and November 1st, yep. So Halloween weekend. There's a morning and afternoon, so 8 a.m. or 1 p.m. start. It's a four-hour class, and it's in Epping, New Hampshire at New England Dragway. Just go to putonthebrakes.org and register for the class there, and we'll look forward to seeing everybody out there.
Yeah, and for our Boston listeners, Epping, New Hampshire, probably less than an hour out of Boston, easy ride up. It's enjoyable time. Maybe you'll still see some leaves change color or something at the same time. But going up to New England Dragway, going up to that area, it's a phenomenal place. And just to be able to take advantage of this, fantastic. Doug, I'm so sorry that you had to come to this because of a personal tragedy in your life, but just to be able to share that with teenagers across the country when teens are so likely to, like you mentioned, so likely to be either hurt or killed in an automobile as opposed to all the other things in the world. And Scott and the folks at Kia, you know, you have to be congratulated as well to, you know, really step up and help Doug with this program here. And again, really the key behind this is just trying to keep teens safe.
Yep. And thank you very much for helping us get the word out. From our standpoint at Kia, the only bad thing about brakes is that they're not everywhere. We want to get them into every city and every state and get as many teens through this program as we possibly can.
Well, we'll try our best. And I think on the website, if people want to find out more information or even donate, they can do it on the website as well, right?
That's correct.
Yep.
Put on the brakes.org.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Marita here with Mike from Coastal Heating and Air Conditioning. Mike, I have to ask, do you recommend eliminating the need for oil in your home and why?
Well, I'm going to speak from my personal experience. I was calling the oil man at least 3 times a year at a minimum of $800 a shot. So when I put the Mitsubishi in, I eliminated him completely. And if you have forced hot air oil system, we all know what it smells like when it turns on and we know the noise it makes. So if you eliminate that and put in the indoor units, you'll actually clean the air in your home. You will have no smell whatsoever, and again, with no noise. So it actually purifies the air. They have allergenic filters in them. So anyone that has breathing issues, they claim this will take care of it.
Wow. Call Mike at Coastal today at 617-770-0636 for all of your heating and air conditioning needs.
At Salem Radio, we're in the birthday business. Let us throw your birthday party. The package includes a full tour of our studios, an in-studio radio recording with the birthday child and guests, cake, of course, along with hoodies, juice and goodie bags, plus a G-rated video like VeggieTales, a photo booth, and a framed birthday photo as a souvenir. Just $25 per child. Give us a call at 617-691-2526 or visit our website at WROLradio.com. And let's party for your child's birthday.
Winter doesn't need to get the best of you. Not with Sullivan Tire and Auto Service on your side.
Hey, this is Paul Sullivan. The Farmer's Almanac is predicting another tough New England winter. The key to getting through is preparing. We'll help you get ready and save you money, too. We've stocked our warehouses so we can provide you with these great deals. Buy three, get the fourth tire free on all winter tires. And buy three and get the fourth tire free on all Yokohama all-season tires. Come in today and beat the rush. Thank you.
And Sullivan Tire does more than just offer the best deals on tires. Trust our team of ASE-certified professionals to keep your car running right all winter long. We do it all. Factory scheduled maintenance, winterizing, batteries, brakes, mufflers, oil changes, tune-ups, computerized wheel alignment, and so much more. Visit SullivanTire.com/60years or call 877-592-TIRE.
AM 950 WROL Boston, the spirit of Boston.
A service of Salem Media Group.
You're listening to The Car Doctor.
And welcome back to the Car Doctor program on AM 950 WROL, the spirit of Boston. And if you would like to join us, our phone number is 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. I want to thank Scott McGee and Doug Herbert for joining us on the Car Doctor program this morning. This is a great program. We've had, you know, over the past couple months, you know, we had Dan Strollo on from In Control Advanced Driver Training talking about his program. Ford on talking about their program. All these places are doing these programs because they need to do them. It's not just a good corporate thing to do. It's because people don't really know how to drive the way they should and how to react in an emergency, and these programs can certainly help. So if you can take advantage of the one going on in Epping, New Hampshire, next weekend on Halloween Day and November 1st, I think you should certainly take, you know, take a look at it at least anyway. Putonthebrakes.org is the website. You register, you put a credit card down to hold your spot to make sure you go. You get your refund when you come back. Even if they were charging $100 for it, it's still a great deal. And, you know, cheaper than a really nice night out, I suppose. Nicer than where I go, but a nice night out, nevertheless. Our phone number again, 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030 is how you get through and talk to us about your car problems. And even if you want to talk about the New Hampshire Auto Show, well, you didn't get your tickets in the mail. Apparently, the people from the New Hampshire Auto Show forgot to mail them. So if you did win and you still want to go, all you have to do is go to the will call window at the auto show and say, hi, I won tickets on the Car Doctor program on WROL Radio, Salem Radio Boston, something like that. Give them your name, and your name should be on a special VIP list, and you should get your family four-pack of tickets. So they are at the New Hampshire Auto Show. We also have the tickets that are here that showed up yesterday, and I suppose if you want them, I don't know what we would do with them. Leave them in the lobby, maybe, with a name on them? I don't know. We could probably do that. But anyway, if you want tickets to the New Hampshire Auto Show, go to the, and you won last week, go to the will call window. That's how you get them, and we will, we apologize, but it was out of our control. That's why normally I always try to give away things I have in my hand, just in case. Well, it's time to maybe talk a little bit about trivia, and I had a trivia question all written up. Of course, I can't find it now that I'm looking for it. But I think I know what it was. And here's the deal with trivia. Trivia today is open, providing you haven't won anything in a while. So give someone plenty of time. You know, if you won in the last couple months, give it to somebody else. But the trivia question is based around something that happened on October 21st. And it was a prediction movie, and some people would say. And there was a car featured in that movie. And it was October 21st. And if you know what that car was, give us a call at 617-770-3030. What was the car in that movie that really featured October 21st as a big day? Give us a call at 617-770-3030. Let's talk to Paul, though. Good morning, Paul.
I have the answer, but I'm...
You got to keep it to yourself.
Yeah. I'm going to give it to somebody else.
Yeah.
I have a good question. It's you talk about auto shows. It's a movable feast. Or maybe famine, depending on how they do the show. When is the New England Auto
It's
going to.
I think it's scheduled for the same time as it has been the last couple of times, which was right around Martin Luther King weekend.
Okay.
So in January-ish.
It used to be November.
It did, and it was either depending on who you talk to, it was either considered the last auto show of the season or the first auto show of the season, depending on who you talk to. It was kind of interesting, and when it was at Bayside, I actually kind of liked it over there because it was, to me, it was convenient. We're at the Boston Convention Center, a little less convenient. Bayside is, you know, terrible as that place was. It was, you know, there was parking there. It was easy to get to. Parking's a little more limited at the Boston Convention Center. But on the other hand, you get much nicer displays and a lot more room at the Boston Convention Center. So you get better stuff. The problem is Boston competes with Detroit. So they have to decide, okay, we're going to put all of our big displays in Detroit, and we're going to put some of our big displays in Boston. I think if once Boston figures out their time, once they figure out where to position themselves on the calendar, you know, you talk about big auto shows like Detroit, New York, L.A.,
And then there's kind of the mid shows, which are sort of Miami, Chicago. Boston should be at least a good, solid mid-level show, where maybe they occasionally do an introduction of at least a North American intro or maybe even a worldwide intro. I think Boston could sustain it, but they just have to find their spot.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, I remember going to both, the Bayside.
Yeah.
Old enough to remember when they had them at the old Boston Armory.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, and what's interesting, too, from kind of a little on the inside of the auto shows, it used to be 10 days at Bayside. It's 5 days in the Boston Convention Center. Mm-hmm. And to be there half the time cost twice as much.
Wow.
I guess the rent from the city is more expensive.
You know, the one thing, maybe I'm wrong, but I had the sense when it was at Bayside, everything here at the convention center is really linear. I mean, it looks like you're walking into a parking lot sometimes, and it's hard to really even walk through the maze to actually see, you know, if you want to see, I don't know, Jaguars picked something out. And, of course, the other thing is, I wish Rolls-Royce would just, stay home.
Yeah.
I mean, they have a big, they have a big rope around it.
I know,
I
know.
You can look, but don't touch.
Yeah, I'm always bothered by that, too. And even when, and I guess, in New York, they had one of the million-dollar Porsches there. And they put it in a giant glass box, and it's sort of like, well, that's nice to look at it, but I want to look at it. You know, if I want to stare at it through a window, I'll look at it online, So I never quite understood that. Although I will say my favorite part of the Boston Auto Show is when you get up on one of those overhead corridors and you look down.
Yeah.
And then you really get an idea of what's there. And it's pretty impressive looking at it from, top down like that.
It used to also be at the Heinz Convention Center at
one
point, too.
Yeah.
And Pontiac used to take over the stage, I remember.
Right. Yep.
So you'd walk in, the first thing you would see was Pontiac.
Yeah.
No, it was a great visual for them, but
it's
gone, and so is
the Pontiac. Yeah, and it's sort of interesting because depending on how the show is put on, like GM still uses their union folks to come out rather than the dealers supporting it, and then some of the smaller manufacturers like Porsche or something, the stand is essentially staffed by dealer personnel. Where you go to something like maybe Toyota, and they're actually presenters that work for a company, and they actually go through about something like 90 days worth of training. So they really, I walked up to one of the women presenting at the Toyota thing, and I said to her, for next year is the Corolla going to have LED headlights? And she looked at me for a second, and she went, nope, there will be LED headlights in the Avalon, certain levels of the Camry.
Wow.
And I'm like, wow, you really, you know your stuff. And they're like, yeah, they really drill it into us about what we need to know and, how we train. And she said, if you end up being pretty good at it, you just end up being on a circuit where you go from one show to another, and you become pretty valuable to them because you really know the topic.
I think I noticed that last year, this year when I went, thanks to you.
Yeah.
The other thing that they're doing, sometimes it's really difficult to find brochures. They want to send you everything on a computer.
Yeah.
So they
want
to reduce the paper, and, I think that's one of the best-selling tools. You can actually walk away with, a brochure about a particular car.
Yeah.
And that's not always, I think Ford was probably the worst, I think.
I
may be wrong.
Yeah.
But they really should reconsider that.
I think they should give everybody an iPad.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's even better. Absolutely. I won't disagree with you there. Well, I'll let you get on.
All right.
You talk about auto shows, and I'm sure someone will have the answer
to
the
question.
Right?
All right, good. Okay, thanks, Paul. Bye-bye. And remember, you like Paul was honest. He said, I know the answer, but I won something a while back. I hope you're the same way. Let's go to Mike on line one. Mike?
Hi, good morning, John.
Good morning. So what do you think?
Great. Well, is it the DeLorean by any chance Back to the Future?
It is the DeLorean by any chance in Back to the Future. You are absolutely right. So it was, and it's kind of funny. I got home late, I think it was Wednesday night or Tuesday night, I don't remember which night I was home late, and there was something on the History Channel, and it was sort of looking at the predictions of Back to the Future, and it was sort of, you know, here's the glasses that look like Google glasses. They're a little different. You know, well, we don't really have flying cars yet, unless you count the one that's, you know, they're trying to build up in Woburn or Burlington or wherever it is, the Terra Fugia. But it is, you know, we looked at, you know, they looked at all the different things. You know, there is that, there's, you know, a company trying to make a hoverboard, you know, that, you know, it's, I guess it will work, providing the roads are made out of copper. But they're, you know, they're, but, you know, there's some of the things, some of the technology that's in there is you know, I guess they did a pretty good job predicting the future a little bit, so.
Yeah, the actually connection with the Cubs winning.
That's a good point, because I remember Michael J. Fox kind of laughing when he, you know, when he was in the movie. You got the Cubs are in the World Series, come on, and they got pretty close, so.
Yeah, it was pretty close.
Yeah.
It's funny, I was listening on BZ last night, and you were talking about hoverboard, and there's a gentleman that calls himself the Gadget Concierge, and he was talking about a hoverboard and something that he was trying to get a hold of to actually be able to talk about it. So it's kind of interesting you mentioned that, too.
Yeah, there's one that they're calling a hoverboard, and it's sort of it looks sort of like a skateboard with wheels on the end perpendicular to the board, and it's actually sort of a kind of a Segway-ish sort of thing. So it doesn't really hover. It's got wheels on it. But you sort of lean forward and lean back, but there's nothing to hold on to other than you're just standing on the board. And I think so far what that's done is broken a few wrists because people have fallen off of them. I guess apparently it doesn't balance quite that well. But those things are $600 or $700. So there is some interesting stuff out there. So.
And a steep learning curve, I'm sure.
I'm sure. I rode a Segway once, and I was amazed at how it was. Dean Kamen, the guy who invented the Segway, was actually in Brookline at the Museum of Transportation, and they wanted to show. They had their engineering team, and they wanted to show off the Segway, and they let people take it for a ride. And at first, you could ride it around the inside the museum, and then they said, "Oh, you know, why don't you take it outside?" And rode up and down the roadway in front of the auto museum in Brookline. And I got to tell you, you got on it, and it was after a minute of figuring out you weren't going to fall off, it was actually pretty easy to ride. And what was, I thought, kind of interesting about that was they said, oh, where's Dean Kamen? And they said, oh, he's not here. He's busy. He wasn't able to make it. And their engineering team was there and told them how they designed the Segway. And I think I got up at one point and went into the bathroom, and Dean Kamen's in the bathroom. And I said to him, aren't you Dean Kamen? Because he's kind of a shorter guy. And he said, yeah, I am. And I said, well, how come you're not out presenting your latest greatest thing? Because he also did a portable dialysis machine. That's one of the other things he invented. And he said, I don't really like to talk in front of crowds. So he was just sort of hiding in the background. And he asked me, he said to me, oh, please don't let anyone know I'm here. And
sure.
I guess he's just a kind of a shy guy that doesn't really like to talk in front of the public. So he just wanted
funny.
To see.
I remember when they were first talking about this, it was kind of a secret, and it was going to change the world and how personal transportation and that kind of thing when it first was coming out. So I know that
I'm still waiting.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, I'll tell you what. We'll put you on hold. Kelly will get your name and address down. We'll send you out some delightful prize.
All right, I appreciate it,
all right.
John. Thank you.
Thank you
so much.
All
I
right.
really enjoy it. I look forward to it every Saturday.
Thank you very much. Yeah. All right, so Kelly will take care of Mike, and I'll go over to Tom on line three. Hey, Tom.
Here I am on line three.
There you are.
How are you, sir?
Good, how are you?
Good, thank you. Hey, I got a question for you. I got this renewal for my auto insurance this past week, and I could see the rates have gone up, and it's like, oh, here we go again. So I called the agent. Of course, they have no control over it. And, of course, I asked a stupid question, why, and they said because of what goes on in the state of Massachusetts, everybody, you know, so everything's going up. And then I said, well, like everybody else says, how come I drive good and there's no problems, I never had an accident, but my rate goes up and, you know, all that. So I says, how can I save money? And they review the policy, and they said, I can plug in this device under my steering wheel.
Oh, okay, yep.
and I can save money that way. And I said, so what's it all about? They said, well, it records if you go over the speed of 80 and if you jam the brakes on.
Mm-hmm.
And they will make an adjustment on your policy when they get the feedback.
Right.
Now, I don't go over 80, but sometimes, depending on how other people drive, I have to jam on the brakes.
Yeah, it's actually how it works is you don't get penalized for your bad driving. You get credited for your good driving. So,
what's the definition of good driving?
It's kind of staying within that window of, you know, occasionally you're going to need to jam on your brakes. That's, you know, right. A normal part of driving.
Right.
But you must have Progressive?
No, I have Allstate.
Oh, Allstate. Okay. So, yeah, Progressive, I think, was the first one that came out with it. And it's a device that plugs into the computer port under the car.
Okay.
And it records kind of all the data that's in there, and then they ask you to share that data. You know, you go onto their website and you download it, and it says what you did. And it's, some people think it's a little bit of delving into, you know, your own privacy, and other people aren't bothered by it. But
that's one of my concerns.
Yeah, and, you know, the thought is that you will, you know, right now they're going to say, we're going to let you save money by being a good driver. At what point do they say, we're going to penalize you for being a bad driver?
Right.
Yeah, right now they're saying they're only going to credit you for being a good driver, not penalize you for being a bad driver. But at some point, are they going to penalize you for being a bad driver? Probably.
Mm-hmm. At that point, I can unplug it.
Yeah, exactly.
And send it back to them.
Yeah, and then they, and the other thing is it actually tells you know when it's unplugged at the same time. So for instance, say you decided tomorrow morning you really wanted to go to North Carolina and you needed to do it in 10 hours.
Right.
So I'm going to drive it 90 miles an hour the whole way and you unplugged it.
Right.
They would go, oh, there was this day that it was unplugged. We're not going to validate the information or something like that. The other weird thing is that some vehicles, the data port in your car is designed to take information out and to do it sort of in a diagnostic mode. When you plug some of these devices in and they stay in there for a long time, they're actually pinging the computer in the car literally thousands of times a minute. And I know some Volkswagens, for instance, it actually has caused some drivability problems, so the car didn't shift right. And on my own car, my own poor little old Hyundai, I put it in, and it seemed to be okay. And then all of a sudden, one day I got in the car, and the traction control light came on. I'm like, what's that all about? Huh, maybe I'm having a problem with the traction control. So I drove around, traction control light's on, I couldn't shut it off. I unplugged the thing, and the light went out. So it was doing something to the car's computer that actually caused the traction control to default and shut off. So some of them work fine. There's no issues. Others, there can be some, you know, some weird, quirky stuff. I know I was talking to the guys at Volkswagen and Audi, and they said the first thing we do when somebody says there's an issue with a shifting problem with some of these new dual-clutch transmissions in the Volkswagen and Audis, first thing they do is they look for one of those devices, which somehow is referred to as a dongle. And I don't know why they call it a dongle, but it's a dongle.
A dongle, yeah.
And they the first thing they do is take the dongle out, clear the codes, and then tell the person to drive it. And they said every time they've done that, the person's never come back with an issue. So,
is there like a certain average of money that you do save? Is it worth it?
I don't know. It's probably
3%.
Yeah, 3 to 5%, something like that, I would guess. Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess the good thing is the insurance regulations are relaxed a little bit in Massachusetts where it allows for some of this stuff. But, 5 years ago that wasn't the case. So.
But just another thing of government is not government, but the insurance company. I don't know if I really want that.
And that's why at AAA our feeling is that the data that your car produces, and we know that, you know, all cars produce some form of data, some more than others, you should know what it is, or at least you should know what most of it is, and you should have control over where it goes. And if you decide that it goes, it's going to go to the car manufacturer, but the car manufacturer shouldn't just blatantly sell it off to somebody else, which, you know, is potentially the case. I mean, sort of the, you know, I always said it had, this has nothing to do with repairs and maintenance. It really has to do with marketing. So if your car knows that every, you know, every Thursday morning at 7 o'clock in the morning, you stop at Dunkin' Donuts, you know, next thing you know, you're going to be getting a coupon either for Dunkin' Donuts or maybe Starbucks says, hey, what, you come and see us and we'll give you a dollar off your coffee.
Right.
And only because it knows that your car stops at this place, you know, pretty regularly.
Yes, good point.
Yeah, or even, you know, and this is not science fiction. This isn't back to the future. If you had a car with satellite radio and you routinely listened to a country station, and every time Kenny Chesney came up, you tagged the song, and next thing you know, Ticketmaster's sending you a coupon for, you know, Kenny Chesney coming to Mansfield.
You know, every time I listen to your show and, you know, Goss's Garage, all these different ones that I like,
yep,
you know, listening to or watching, I want to go out and get myself a 68 Chevy Impala with a 283 two-barrel power glide.
With no computers in it?
No computers, no, you know, tire pressure monitors. What's my biggest emissions? Was a PVC valve and an air filter or whatever
yep,
it is.
Yep.
And I can put 13-inch tires in the front and 15s in the back.
And,
you know,
and nothing bad happens.
You can go down to Duddy Tires and pick up a new set anytime I want. You know, that type
yep,
of thing.
Yep.
It's like, okay, now I'm in control. I can turn the steering wheel any way I want. I can, you know, parallel park on my own. All these things, it's like government's taking a throw, or the cars say, well, you can't, you get a flat tire, and you replace the tire, and all of a sudden they get replaced two of them, because the tread design or the wear on the two tires are different.
Well, I was out in Worcester this week, and I was talking to a group, and it turned into a car discussion, and a woman said to me, I have a Honda Accord.
Okay.
And she said, I, 2 years ago, bought, or last year, I bought maybe it was 2 years ago. She said, I bought a set of snow tires, four snow tires and four wheels to put on my Honda, and because I want better traction in the wintertime. And when I did that, she said it was all fine, and she said the tire store told me the tire pressure light was going to come on because my factory tires and wheels, the pretty wheels and tires,
yeah,
have the sensors in them, and when I put those tires in the garage, the sensors are going to be there, and they're not going to be read by the car, so the tire pressure light's going to be on. Don't worry about it. And she said, I drove all winter, and I didn't worry about it.
Okay.
She said, this year I happened to be in for an oil change, and they came over to me, and they said, oh, by the way, we're not going to be able to put your tires on this year. And she said, why not? I bought them here. Why can't you put them on? And they said, because by putting on four wheels and tires without the tire pressure monitor systems in, we have willfully disabled a safety system, and we can't put the tires on. So she said, what am I supposed to do? And they said, you're going to have to buy another set of tire pressure monitors for this extra set of wheels and tires and have them programmed every time you go to put them in, or you got to find, you know, some, you know, neighborhood kid who's willing to jack the car up and replace the tires for you.
Now, is that so?
Yeah, that is in fact real life, yeah. Yeah, so this is a case of the government. They thought they had a good idea by mandating vehicle manufacturers put tire pressure monitors in so you wouldn't drive around with a half-flat tire, when, in fact, now what they've done is it's caused a problem.
Also, when you post things on Facebook, I found it interesting, the article you did about all-wheel drive.
Yep.
In the wintertime with snow.
Yep.
Quite interesting, different articles, because you think you're doing pretty good with good traction and everything else, and you have about as much control as you do with just regular rear-wheel drive or front-wheel drive.
Yep.
And
yep,
snow is snow, and ice
yep,
is ice.
And kind of funny, that was a reposted article, I think, from the from a newspaper in Europe. And I think I've heard in London, when it snows, they just shut down the city for 3 days until it melts.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't own a plow in London, apparently. So.
Well, just quickly, my wife and I lived out in Arizona for 5 years, and it snowed in, maybe four times a year because of the elevation.
Mm-hmm.
And they would close down the highway. There'd be a state trooper at one end and another state trooper at the other end, and you got, you know, the 18-wheelers, the Walmart, big 18-wheel
yep,
trucks and everything else. They close down the highway because they don't know how to drive, or they don't have standards mm-hmm, or plows or anything else like that. But by about 8, 8:30 in the morning when the sun's up,
it's gone and they allow people to go past. They just close everything down. Yeah, it's nice to see the snow and the cactus and everything else, but then, like I said, once the sun comes up, they have no control over that.
Yeah, and fortunately this year it's not going to snow in New England, so you're not going to have to worry.
Yeah.
Okay, Tom.
Have a great week.
You too.
Bye-bye.
All right, take care. Bye-bye. Well, I had a short opportunity, and probably just as well, to drive a pretty interesting car. Normally, when I road test a car, we get to road test it for a few days, sometimes up to a week. Well, this I got a phone call and said, yeah, we're going to bring you a car, but we got to get it back in a couple days. I said, what is it? They said, we're going to bring you a Dodge Viper. I was like, Well, I said, what kind of Viper? And they said, a Viper GTC. I said, well, that's interesting. And it's powered by a V10 engine that produces a million horsepower. I might have exaggerated a little, but it's a million horsepower. And it is probably the most disappointing thing. It isn't really loud. It's loud enough, but it's not really loud. But it is ridiculously fast, ridiculously powerful. But one thing I kind of noticed was it either turned heads incredibly or no one cared. I pulled next to a school bus full of high school-ish age, seemed like mostly boys. Nobody even looked. Wow. They kind of looked over, looked back, and went back to looking at their phones. Didn't even really look at the car, which was a little disappointing. But it is it's very low to the ground. I think it felt lower than a Miata. Not the easiest thing to get in and out of. It really demonstrated my age. 6-speed manual transmission. Like I said, ridiculously powerful, huge wide hood, beautiful paint job. It was this was customized by, there was a plaque on the dash that was designed by Sneaky Pete's Customs. And it was actually a very, very nice looking car. It did have a backup camera, which was nice because you couldn't see anything backing up. Side exhaust, again, when it sat there idling, it wasn't that loud. Gigantic rear tires. The tires had to be 28 inches wide, and slipped the clutch a little bit, step on the gas, and spun them up like you were on ice. They just, as good a tire as it was, this thing has that kind of power. I think it's 625 horsepower, so it's a ridiculous amount of horsepower. But it did have all the kind of normal creature comforts you would expect to find. Not that I used a single one. In fact, I found myself shutting the radio off. I found it annoying and just wanted to listen to the car. And it was a delight, except I think I drove the car 2 days and put gas in it twice. Uh-huh. Fuel economy's not good. You don't want to drive with a coffee cup because you can't find any place to put it. There's two cup holders behind you. So they're not designed to actually, they're not designed to be able to do any of that. So, but it was a fun 2 days to drive. I sort of tried to hide it at work because I don't want people getting jealous or anything about it. So I sort of tucked it in the corner. Speaking of in the corner, there's Paul Sullivan sitting in the corner over there, just quietly sitting there.
Reading the paper. Joanne gave me the paper.
The paper?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's your friend Herb Chambers.
There he is.
You know why he's worth $4 billion? Because he's selling a car here for $66,919. Do you know how much I paid for my first house? $66,919.
Okay, Grandpa.
So, yeah. Well, I remember.
I remember when gas was 10 cents a gallon and I paid $7,200 for my house.
What a beautiful car.
Yeah.
But doesn't have any bedrooms.
Hi.
What's up?
Well, the Viper, just to clarify, the Viper had a base price of $94,999. and as tested price with options of $116,285. How's that compare to your first house?
Well, then it comes back to the old question that you and I go back and forth with. Why did they let you drive it?
That's a good point. I have no idea. Because I put it in my driveway, and it doubles the price of my house.
Right, and exactly. And the kids don't even know what it is.
It's one extreme or the other. Either they fall off the sidewalk looking at it, or they could care less. And for a busload of high school kids that just kind of glanced over and looked back, and it wasn't like they were too cool to Yeah. You know, they were just like, another
car. Yep.
And especially
it rolls, it drives.
And especially, you know, it's, you know, maybe in Las Vegas or Fort Lauderdale or Miami or L.A. where you see these kind of things all the time. This is Brockton. Yeah. You know, it's, you don't see a Viper every day in Brockton. So
no, you don't.
No, you don't. So what's up for the Irish Hit Parade today, Mr. Sullivan?
It's late October. I think there's one Irish Halloween song. We might play that.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
There really is. Yeah. I didn't make that up. I do make up a lot of stuff, but not that.
And what's your shirt say today? It's always you.
Oh. It's one of my favorite places to go out and eat. It's out in Norfolk. It was actually, it's pretty close to Gillette Stadium. It's about a mile away, and it was founded by Russ Francis. He used to play tight end for the Patriots a long time. It was the Eagle Brook Saloon.
Oh, okay.
Right. Beautiful place. If you're out my way,
stop. I might have checked that out because in 2 weeks, there's something called the Best Ever Senior Expo at Gillette.
Yeah.
And the people setting it up asked me if I'd come over and do a little seminar for 45 minutes. And and while I'm there, it's either Toby Keith or Eagle Brook Saloon.
You go, take your whatever $100,000 car you're driving at the time. Get in it.
Yeah.
Take get onto Route 1 and take a right in about a half mile, and you'll come upon it.
There we go.
Well, I have to make another turn, but
that's okay.
It's a great place. They were the ones that had that free Brady beer.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
They're really close. They're really sports minded. Yep. It's a great place. It looks like an old saloon. You can go upstairs, and you got the tables that hang over the main dining room. It's wonderful, and they have nice warm long sleeve t-shirts.
Long sleeve t-shirts.
It's better in the back. Want to see the back? Yeah, this is.
Eagle Brook Saloon, having fun since 1981.
Yeah.
Look, it even rhymed. They probably had to change the year they started. So.
Well, I mean, you could do that.
Could have been nice. Having fun since 1980.
Living true since 82.
Yeah, it just doesn't
work. The beer is free since 83, you know.
Yes. But that'd be a lie.
The whole, exactly.
Hey, the very best in Irish music with Paul Sullivan and the Irish Hit Parade coming up now. Until next week, make sure you wear your seatbelt, drive safely, and be good to your car. Talk to you all next week. Bye-bye.